From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back, Chiefs fans. I just want to preempt this show real quick to let you know a couple of things. One, the Chiefs did not get a selection. No new player in Kansas City through the supplemental draft. Evidently, from the rumors that I've put together so far with folks that have an inside track, the Chiefs were pretty happy with their younger players deeper down the depth chart and didn't feel they needed to put in a pick. So no supplemental draft selection for the Chiefs. And what that meant was, as we were waiting for that news, we decided we were going to record an episode about a couple other topics. We're bumping the second half of Matt Waldman's detailed look at Patrick Mahomes and how he can evolve in 2018, what he's going to look like as a player based on the film. That second half of the film session is going to air tomorrow. So late Thursday night for Friday, make sure you check that out. You don't want to miss the rest of that. Matt's got some great insight and a really interesting take on what Patrick's going to look like for the season in 2018. So we will let that go for now and just want to let you guys know that. And I think we're going to get started and we'll have Seth kick it off.
Welcome to Locked On Chiefs. It is a great night to talk Chiefs with two of my very favorite people in the world. Chris with Locked On Chiefs, who is, I would probably say, the best writer in this podcast, but that's only one out of three. And Ryan of RGR Football on YouTube, who is making videos far better than I could ever possibly make. And I'm Seth Kaiser. I don't really matter. Fellas, how you doing tonight?
The Athletic.
You're the guy. Oh, right.
I'm doing great, but you are really going to blow my mentions up with the comments like that.
Oh, well, I'm trying to do that.
Your mentions up.
I was just hoping that you would like agree and you'd be like, "Oh, thanks." And then I could do like the whole Mean Girls thing, like, "So you agree you're a better writer than me." And then we could do like a whole, "Chris, I'm the best writer in this podcast." And that would have been fun.
Yeah,
you know, drama sells, guys.
Yeah, but see, I didn't fall for it because I already pissed you off enough the last show, so...
and everybody knows I can't write.
Yeah, sorry, Ryan.
Yeah, but hey, I'm throwing Ryan in that argument.
I make pretty pictures, though, folks. My graphs are awesome.
They are incredible graphs. And hey, man, if someone broke into my home and told me your life depends on making a YouTube video, I literally would die. And so... At least you can somewhat do what I do. I can't do remotely what you do. So anyway, it is a glorious night to talk about the Chiefs. I am just excited to be here with you guys. And I have a topic I want to talk about. I bet you can guess what it is because it's one of the two things I always want to talk about.
Parking prices at Arrowhead?
Those are terrible, honestly. I don't know how you knew.
I know, right?
No, Mark, my
give him a break.
Chris, he wants to talk about Chris Jones. He wants to talk about Chris Jones
Chris
in his sophomore slump.
Oh, you know what? No, we already did Chris Triggers Seth as a segment last time, and I refuse to turn that into a weekly bit because people enjoyed that way too much. I actually was told that ranting Seth was someone's favorite Seth, which – fair enough. No, I want to talk about my 40-year-old son, Mitch Morse. Come on.
That guy.
I wrote about Mitch Morse because Mitch Morse is worth talking about. So as I'm wont to do, I broke down Mitch Morse's tape on The Athletic, where I write, not as well as Chris, but where I write. And I just wanted to – I was curious. I wanted to – before I talk about what I did, I wanted to pick your guys' brain. Chris, give me your thoughts on my 40-year-old son.
I think he's a very good player. To be honest with you, my main concern right now is can he stay healthy? I do think that he could be a very good player in this league for a very long time and is going to be deserving of a generous second contract soon if he can stay healthy. And I'm not trying to call him injury prone, but right now, how many seasons has he played that he's played all 16 games?
How many seasons have you played all 16 games, Chris? Anyway, Ryan, now that you know how I'll react.
I already brought out angry Seth. I see how it is.
Now, Ryan, now that you know how I react, what do you think of my 40-year-old son?
I tell you what, I like the way he plays. The injury concern is obviously there, but he's a very good center. But I want to see him at guard.
Oh, God.
I want to see him pulling a whole lot more than he does now.
That sound
I want to see him in space because I think that's his best attribute.
That sound you hear is me tying a noose around my neck. You know what? I actually understand why some people want to see him at guard. I really get that. I'm kind of a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of guy. And so to me, if you've got a guy who's a really good center, why risk it? That kind of thing. So here's an interesting thing for you guys. You know, I'm curious. I had a lot of people when I said I was writing about Morse talk to me about Zach Fulton, you know, about the idea of, well, they should have just retained Fulton and moved him to guard. So, Ryan, is that what you would have done?
No, Zach Fulton doesn't fit this offense. I think he did an admirable job of being a straight ahead man type blocking guard that did his best to fit in his own system.
Right.
I give Zach Fulton a lot of credit, but he was not tailor made to play in this system.
Better center
than
guard.
Morse is. Yes, I agree. I agree. And you're right. I understand what you're saying. Don't mess up the center position by moving him. But here's the thing. He's probably of all these linemen, and they're all fairly athletic, except for Schwartz. He's the only guy that isn't like one of the most athletic guys in his draft class.
Right.
But Mitch is the best on the move on this roster, even better than LDT. And so I want to see him be taken advantage of in the way that he is best at the most. And I think you can do that better from left guard than at center.
And I think there's a really solid argument to make for that. Chris, have you ever thought the whole move him to guard, see what happens?
I have. The question I have, and this is kind of where I've been toying with the idea, is he going to be better than who else you would have? And I think he would be at this point. You had a guy in Zach Fulton last year, I think, that could have played center a lot better than he could have played left guard. And Morse, I think, would have been better at left guard. So I think it would have been a better situation last year than it is this year.
Sure. Overall, best five.
Right.
So here's the interesting thing. I've had a lot of people talk to me about, you know, what happened with him last year. And so what I found, and I don't know whether this would surprise you guys or not, is Morse played really, really well the first couple of weeks, like against New England especially. It's interesting that you'd mention the run game, Ryan, because he was like the vehicle behind which the run game drove in that game, because they ask Morse to do a lot in the run game. It's kind of a unique position he's put in, right? And that's one reason why Fulton, they kind of had to change things up, because they ask Morse to get into space way more.
Well, and isn't he much, much better in making that reach block to the outside three technique and trying to get on those outside zones?
Absolutely. He's fantastic at that. He's got such great lateral agility. And like you intimated, they've got a really athletic offensive line, and Morse is the most athletic of them. He gets out in space like crazy. And he does combo blocks more often than you'll see from like any other center, except a couple of them. Like Jason Kelsey does a ton too. But, you know, most of the time in these combo blocks, it's the guard who's sliding off and going to the second level. For the Chiefs, it's often Morse. And it is just the coolest thing watching him play in space. That's one reason why, you know, this whole narrative that I'm in love with him or that he's my son has grown, because I just love the way he plays. He's so technically sound. You could show his film, especially in pass pro, where he's not a naturally really strong guy, so he's got to have his pad level right. He's got to have his hand placement right. His feet got to be right, and they almost always are. So here's the interesting thing. He plays really well against New England, plays really well against Philly, gets hurt at the end of the game, then comes back, and he just – and I wanted to make sure I confirmed this on film. He just wasn't himself when he came back. I actually included some video clips, I don't know if you saw them, of him getting out in space when he came back. And you could see that he was laboring. And the funny thing is he was still pretty fast, but he wasn't as fast. And so what happened, and I thought you guys might be interested in this, and this is, again, you know, to plug it, it's on The Athletic, where you can find my work if you're interested. His loss percentage as a lineman still stayed really solid, but his win percentage dropped from around 30% to like 10%.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. That was a concussion, right?
It was a foot injury against Philly. Yep.
Oh, that was the foot, and then the concussion came later?
Was that the
season before?
That was the season before. The foot injury is what shut him down ultimately this year. So what happened was he already had some hand and other like arm injuries. And I remember, you know, you could actually see that later in the season after plays, you'd see him favoring his one of his hands, which I mean, what, he's a tough dude. I mean, he went for it and he clearly tried to play hurt. And you could just see it not working out. He's such a gifted help blocker in pass protection, but he couldn't quite get there as fast. So rather than making a great help block, he'd make an okay one, and it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be a win. Instead, it might be a neutral play. And it was interesting watching how that affected the offense as a whole. And so I was just curious, you both of you sound a little nervous about injury.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I,
you're not,
I'm not, I can't say why, but I've got a good feeling. I just got a good feeling about Mitch Morse that he's going to be back and healthy and doing well. And if he is, I think that'll be huge for the offense as a whole, especially given the fact that he's a gifted communicator and calling out protections and that kind of thing. And I think that could really help Mahomes out. So, yeah, man.
I think it'll really help Hunt as well.
Oh, maybe absolutely. Maybe even more so than Mahomes. That's a really good point, because Hunt, for as gifted a runner as he is, sometimes, you know, he needs help just like anyone else. And when a fully healthy Mitch Morse, man, he gets the second level, and it is super, super pretty. Well, I appreciate you guys indulging me to talk about my son. I think we've gone on doing that long enough. Let's take a quick break and then talk about something other than my family.
Boy, I think you could probably talk about your family for quite some time, but we will be moving on to the defensive side of the ball. And
they call us Legion, for we are many.
Yeah, well, we have five kids, six counting Morse. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
My apologies.
Yeah. How dare you?
Anyway, Ryan is going to die of laughter. So, Seth, I will ask you the question.
Yes.
When you look at this defense, Matt Williamson did a spot on the Locked On NFL podcast talking about defenses that played in the dime the most in 2017. Kansas Sure. City was number three.
Sure. And
do you think that changed?
And he defined dime as removing multiple defensive linemen. Or and having multiple defensive backs, because I've seen,
you know, people... I was going to say, I don't think it's defined about the linemen. This is from PFF, and so I think they're counting DBs, and when they get to six, they consider that dime.
And you should. That's what it's called. But I saw someone refer to it as something different, and that really threw me. So that does not surprise me about last year. They were really Sutton, in my opinion, as far as I could tell, and maybe I'm wrong. It seemed like he was trying to throw quantity at a problem. Coverage was a real problem last year. They tightened it up down the stretch, but it was a real problem for weeks and weeks. It's kind of funny when you're referring to a corner trio of Peters, Steven Nelson, and Revis as by far your best corner trio of the year, but that's when they finally really tightened up. Before that, it was just a mess. And so that doesn't surprise me. It seemed like he was really throwing a lot of bodies out there to try to cover up some of these gaps that were existing. And as far as whether that'll happen again this year, man, I hope not, because I'd like to think that they're going to be a little more comfortable with some of their linebackers in coverage this year.
I have to hope so, too, because run and dime is what got them into that situation against Tennessee. And if you are constantly going to have three safeties on the field, it's going to put you in that situation over and over. And it's also going to put you in a situation where you can't cover everybody as well as you need to. If you can keep the DBs down to five and like you said, use those linebackers. And I think that's really where the Hitchens acquisition comes into play. They feel like he can. Now, I'm not 100% sold, especially in man coverage, but we have to consider that Bob was playing behind. They had a lack of pass rush, right? And I have to feel like their whole plan is they intend to keep six guys in the front half all the time. Am I off?
Well, but they also don't – they also last year did not have a guy that could play Hitchens' role, in my opinion. I mean, you had DJ who was not playing like DJ.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be fair about it.
Now, there's a lot of – there's – there's a stat that goes around about DJ about like allowing the lowest QB rating in coverage. I'll be honest, that kind of thing, when DJ dropped back, it was almost always in some kind of zone role. And so I'm not really sure if I can credit DJ, because I've heard people, oh, he was still great in coverage. I think he still was adequate in coverage, knew where to be, but I didn't think he got proper depth in his coverage all too often, right, especially early in the year. And Hitchens, that's one thing. And, Ryan, I understand your trepidation regarding Hitchens in coverage. I don't think he's great at it. But I do think he played a ton of coverage in Dallas. And so that's at least the good thing. He's got a lot of experience dropping into zone.
Well, and I think that's another part of the adaptation that we're going to see is more towards what fits their personnel. And like we have seen in the past, Reggie Ragland slimmed down to try and stay on the field more, to try and keep Daniel Sorensen or whoever's going to play that big safety, small linebacker role off of the field. It makes a big difference. And if you can play, and also I think the other thing, and I have looked, I haven't seen enough of Hitchens in dogging that makes me think that he can provide pressure, but I know Reggie Ragland can. And I think the A-gaps are particularly important this season to getting some pressure to aid everybody else, and I want to see them send more. We've seen Bob be creative in blitz structure in the past, and last year was more the aberration than the rule. Do you guys, Chris, do you think he'll blitz more?
Hard to say at this point. It really is going to depend on the linebackers. I think that he is a group that's maybe can be used better to blitz more. And getting Eric Berry back, let's be fair about that as well. He's one of the best at blitzing at his position, in my opinion, in the NFL. I think he's phenomenal at it, especially you look at how he does against the run. His timing and whatnot is phenomenal. So I think getting him back really helps that defense when it comes to blitzing the quarterback. The interesting thing to me is going to be watching what they do with Ragland and Hitchens and how often they play them and how often they actually take them off the field. Because to me, if they take Hitchens off the field on third downs and leave Ragland in or vice versa, I think you're kind of wasting money on Hitchens. I know they're different players, but you want to keep both of those guys on the field to be able to stop the run and to give you the most scheme diverse defense you can have.
I think that's a good thought. And it is interesting that Ragland has purposefully slimmed down. It kind of goes away from the thought that we've had about the Chiefs for a long time that you've got one roamer and one thumper.
It's the classic 34 setup.
Right. It smacks as a little more of an interchangeable system, which I've always felt if you can get the horses to do that is the way to go. You never want to be pigeonholed, in my opinion. Right. That's one reason why certain aspects of the 34 and some of the more traditional expectations, say, placed on nose tackles have always bothered me. Now, to be fair, let's be honest, 43s have nose tackles too. So, I like players that can do multiple things. And that's why one reason, when the Broncos defense was great, they had multiple inside linebackers who could cover and defend the run. That's a big deal. So I would really like to see them be able to, like you said, kind of be more scheme diverse and be able to do multiple things. And also, here's a side note, and I'll let you talk in a second. I'm going to let you finish, Chris, but hang on. The fact that Ragland seems to be taking on a leadership role on the defense, you can't undersell that aspect of things, that human element. You really want a guy who is one of your leaders on defense. Hopefully he can earn a spot on the field more often than not, because otherwise it's going to be tough to keep guys getting behind him. From everything I'm reading about Ragland, he's a dude you want as one of your defensive leaders.
No, and I absolutely agree with that. I do like the fact that he's slimming down and that he's trying to be more scheme diverse. I don't think that you're going to really take, in my opinion anyway, the thumper player out of him. That's just the type of player he is in my eyes. He's going to be hitting the hole, and he's going to be that type of player, but he can be more well-rounded.
Right, and I just mean more schematically the idea that there's one guy who schematically is looking to take on blockers as opposed to fill gaps. You know, and so, but I definitely agree. What makes Ragland one of his best traits is when he hits guys, I mean, they're done. I mean, the forward progress has halted. He finishes really well. And I think the hope is obviously that he can slim down 10 pounds, gain an extra step, and still have that leverage, that kind of unique, just for whatever reason, he hits just a little bit harder. It's that same thing that Eric Berry has. Eric Berry is not bigger than any other safety, but for whatever reason, he just hits a little harder. And, you know, maybe it's a little mercury in his blood. I don't know what it is. But, well, no, that would make him heavier too. So I don't know. One thing, since we're talking about linebackers, one wild card in all this, we still have no idea, and maybe they won't use him at all on defense this year, what they're going to do with Dorian O'Daniel. I understand he might be really raw. It's weird to me that they've got him at outside linebacker. To me, he screams big safety.
Well, let's take a quick second. We'll come back and talk about him versus the other guy who can play that role specifically.
I want to say real quick before we take a quick break, it did come out. Eric Berry is the number two safety in Madden. Not that it really matters, but just thought it was interesting that he's that safety considering he didn't play at all last year except for one game.
Right.
Eric Berry is wildly respected around the league. I mean, he is. I mean, there's a reason why. I mean, Sam Mellinger, who would know very well. I mean, the way he made it sound, Marcus Peters, who is a tough guy to earn respect from, practically worshipped Berry. And I mean, that there's a reason for that. I mean, he's the one guy I will watch him do a hype, like, you know, the huddle hype speech. I'll watch him do that because he is like, he is just that he earns that kind of respect, and he is a great player. And I don't think anyone doubts it'll come back.
No, I don't either. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that wasn't quick at all. Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah. We'll be back in a second. So you started talking about Dorian Daniel, and I'm glad you did because I think he's the one guy through this offseason that's gone a little bit under the radar. Haven't seen a whole lot about him. And he's got probably, in my opinion, of the rookies that are going to play, including Breland Speaks and guys that have to learn positions, I think he's got probably the biggest hurdle in front of him. And we're not going to turn this into a Sorensen rant, but the unique thing is they're nearly the same size. I do believe Doran's over 6'1", if I remember correctly, with Sorensen at 6'2". But he played in such a position in college that the Dorian O'Daniel plays a lot of coverage.
Yep.
And yes, he's technically a linebacker. I know I've seen him doing linebacker drills, but the coverage aspect seems to be the biggest thing about him, right?
Right. They definitely want him playing not your typical outside linebacker role. And that's what intrigues me about him, is because it looks like they're trying to do something different. I mean, I don't remember what round they took him in the third, right?
Fourth. I do believe.
Yeah.
Was it fourth?
No, the fourth is Watts. Shoot. I mean, no, the fifth was Watts. I don't even remember anymore. Someone's going to have to look that up while I yammer on. But anyway, the point is, they did make an investment in him. And so he's a – when I watch his film, he has something that the Chiefs defense desperately needs. He's got closing speed and the ability to finish. And they lacked that last year. Third round?
Right.
So that's a heck of an investment. I mean, there's no way you take a guy that high just for a special teams contribution. And so it's interesting to me that they've he's that outside linebacker. They clearly don't want him playing the same role as Tino Passanio. You know, I mean, this is not the same thing. And my understanding, Ryan, you're the guy who was at OTAs, is that he really was in coverage a lot with what they were showing. Now, maybe I heard wrong, but I was told that he was playing quite a bit of coverage.
No, that's my understanding as well. And that's the plan as far as I know. And when you look at having Hitchens and Ragland, what that means is it's not trying to take a guy like Sorensen and squeeze him into play a linebacker role in a nickel base. He really is going to be out there in space, not lined up over a guard. And that's the key. But what I think he does, I think he plays that role better than Sorensen because of his coverage ability. I know Dan's made some plays. I take nothing away from him. I just don't think he can do it consistently. I don't like him against the run. Now, I'm sure everybody has some concerns. I know there's a lot of concerns about Armani Watts' tackling, and we can talk about that another day. But what I think this does overall, and I want to bounce this off of you two, I think Dorian O'Daniel wins that role. And I think that pushes Dan Sorensen back to trying to play one of the safety spots. And with Eric healthy, that means the other safety is probably going to be the guy that's deeper more often. And I think that's probably the least thing that Dan Sorensen can do. So do you guys see, and Chris, let's start with you. Do you see Dorian O'Daniel pushing Dan Sorensen off of this roster?
I think he was drafted to. I mean, I'll just be frank about it. I really do think he was drafted to. He is the replacement for what they want Daniel Sorensen. They've wanted Daniel Sorensen to do. They can love a player all he wants. We've kind of talked about this on the offensive side with Charcandrick West. They can love a player all they want. But when they draft your replacement or they bring in a couple of guys at your position specifically, did you look at a guy, you know, we haven't talked about this guy very much, and it's because he's a special teams player, but Robert Golden is a special teams player and is a pretty good one as well. It wouldn't surprise me that he's on this roster and Daniel Sorensen isn't, because Daniel Sorensen's role is pretty much going to be Dorian O'Daniel's role, I believe.
Seth, do you see the
same way? That's where it gets interesting, because what we were just talking about with Hitchens and Ragland, if Hitchens and Ragland are both on the field on obvious, you know, passing downs, so let's say you're rushing four, and if they are keeping – so they're rushing four. You've got three corners out there in all likelihood, so that's seven. You got your two regular safeties. That's nine. So they're going to have to make a choice at a certain point, right, because you've only got two spots left. You've got Hitchens and Ragland, or you bring in Dorian O'Daniel. And so that's my question is, are they going to get rid of that third safety role, or is Dorian O'Daniel going to take that role, or is it maybe going to be a blend to where they don't see as much of it, but the third safety's still on the field, you know, 40% of the time instead of 60 or 70% of the time. And so there's just a whole lot of options here. I do think O'Daniel, when I reviewed his film, what I said was, I want to see him at safety. Now, a very specific type of safety, because in my opinion, he does not backpedal very well. So you got to be careful. He needs the play in front of him. So he's not a guy you want like covering the deep third of the field. He's a guy, but I mean, he's comfortable in coverage. He's pretty fluid. And man, I'll tell you, he is a homing missile on the ball. And so unless Sorensen can really improve on his deep coverage aspects to provide something that no one else can with Ron Parker gone and Watts unproven, I could see him losing his role. Now, I've always heard that the coaches love him, but O'Daniel really seems – he just seems to provide everything Sorensen provides, in my opinion, with a much higher ceiling. Now, he might have a lower floor right now, but Sorensen's floor was pretty low last year.
Let me ask a different question.
A quarter, 20% of Sorensen's salary, right?
And that's exactly right, where I was going with it. Is Sorensen worth keeping if he loses his job to O'Daniel, which I expect? Is he worth keeping? Because at that point, you have Eric Berry as your starter. Maybe Armani Watts is your other starter, or maybe it's Eric Murray. Well, there are three safeties that more than likely are going to be on this roster somehow. And then you have a guy in Robert Golden, who I think can play that fourth safety role. And, you know, Dorian O'Daniel, are you going to count him as a safety, a linebacker? What are you going to count him as?
Well, it seems like they're going to do linebacker for right now. And so it'll just be interesting to see how they do that. Because my hope, I'm kind of hoping, as much as I want O'Daniel to take Sorensen's role, and I do, I'm almost more excited about the idea of them going a completely new direction. You know what I mean? They really do need to shake up the defense a little bit. And it would be really intriguing to me, like, if all of a sudden they're like, you know, we're not going to go dime. We're going to have three linebackers on the field on this obvious passing down. And everyone goes, what? You know, just like, imagine, you know, if you had a, you know, an obvious passing down where your guys that are set up to pass rush are just three guys, like, say, Chris Jones and Houston and Speaks, because they've realized, man, we just don't have that many guys that can get after the passer. So what we're going to do is almost a version of what Belichick does a ton in New England, where on obvious passing downs, you've got two basically down linemen type players who are rushing the passer, obviously, maybe three, and then like three linebackers you know, ready to zone blitz. It's what Pittsburgh's done for years very successfully, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would love it if that's the reason they grabbed O'Daniel, is so they could have all three of them on the field at once to make defenses guess. Hitchens blitzed not a lot, like what you said, Ryan. You didn't see a ton of it. He looks like he can do it pretty well from what I saw, but I don't know. But we know Ragland's a good blitzer. We know O'Daniel's a good blitzer, at least in college. And it would be, I mean, you know, you hear what I'm kind of talking about here, like doing something a little different rather than, okay, here's our front four. They're rushing the passer. Say, okay, here's the deal. We've got Chris Jones and Justin Houston. They're great pass rushers. But, you know, our other guys, why waste a spot on the field on a guy who is a net negative as a pass rusher? And so if Bailey isn't getting the job done, if Williams isn't getting the job done, you know, if maybe Speaks or Ford, you know, all you need to do is grab one third guy maybe. And then, like I said, you've got three down guys and three other guys in the box all threatening the blitz, and you have no idea where the heat's coming from. Again, that's how Pittsburgh has wrecked Reed's offense the last few years.
And that's how you can keep five DBs on the field too.
Absolutely. So that's my hope, not necessarily as a Sorensen replacement, but as a whole new element to the defense. And so maybe I'm putting too much pressure on O'Daniel for something like that, but he really, his physical talent is off the charts.
Do you guys think, and we can leave it at this, I know we're running long, do you guys think that this could signal, for all of their bluster about we're going to have Amerson play press 90% of the time, which I still don't believe, could we be seeing a change in defensive philosophy? Could we see a zone-based blitz defense?
Well, I think that they already were going to be changing the way that their philosophy was going to be running when they drafted Speaks and Passanio in consecutive years. You're talking more about the DBs. I'm just talking in general.
Right.
But I do think that they're already changing their philosophy. Now, whether or not they continue to change it in other ways is another question.
Right. There's a okay, I'm sorry. I saw something on my Twitter timeline that freaked me out for a second, but it's okay. It's okay. I thought it was about Mitch Morse. It's not. I'm okay.
It's all right.
Anyway, this change of philosophy, I mean, you've heard Alan Bailey talking about it, right? We're going to be more aggressive, okay? And then when Xavier Williams signed on, he said part of the reason he signed on is because they talked about being aggressive and attacking rather than asking him to just two gap, which, you know, with Williams, I don't know how big a difference it'll make. I think Williams is a better pass rusher than Benny Logan, but besides that, I don't know. You know, oddly strong against double teams. Really weird. But anyway, so I think you could be seeing a change in philosophy. Now, again, how much of a change, I have no idea. Most coaches are not Andy Reid, where they will, like, you know, or Bill Belichick. And that's why Belichick and Andy Reid have been coaching for 20 years, because they will change things up dramatically. Right. Sutton has changed things up pretty dramatically from year to year, though, like in certain respects. And it would be really cool to see them go to more zone blitzes and then on early downs be more one gap and attacking, maybe running more run blitzes, just a more aggressive defense overall. And also that would fit in with what I imagine the new offensive philosophy to be. You know, bend but don't break defense is not quite as palatable when you're doing a high octane, throw the ball around, quick strike offense like what the Chiefs had for a lot of last year. And so I'd love to see it. So, yeah, okay, take those shots and really, you know, be more aggressive, because the feeling is, even if they score, it's not that big a deal because we'll always score again. So let's go for those big plays that we might make only one out of every three or four drives. And so that would be sweet. I think it would work more with what it looks like they're building on offense.
Well, folks, we're going to get a good look at it when they get to camp. It's getting close, just a couple of weeks away. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. We are excited. Make sure you check out The Athletic for Seth's work. You check out LockedOnChiefs.com for Chris's work. If you get a few minutes, check out RGR Football on YouTube for me, and we will be back with you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review, and reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTracyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.